for me, it was at the end of this, no matter what happens, I want me and my wife to know wholeheartedly that we had made the right choice.
Yeah.
I think living with the guilt of making the wrong choice would be worse than the actual event itself.
The Still Parents podcast is proudly supported by Global's Make Some Noise. Click details in the description to find out more.
Let's do this. Welcome to the Still Parents podcast. My name is Dan. I'm here as ever with Ryan and Matt. Ryan, you good?
I'm good, mate.
Matt, you all right?
Very well.
And we have a guest joining us in the studio, which is great. And I would like to say, I'm an absolutely fine, bold gentleman.
Ooh, bold friends.
You notice I'm pausing because I knew that was going to happen.
Yes. Seamless.
Yes. It's Michael Sherwin. So, hello, Michael. How are you, sir?
Yeah, not too bad.
Have you come from far?
Not too far, Nuneaton, so 30-minute drive.
That's not a Nuneaton accent, though. Where do you hail from?
I hail from a lovely town called Crewe.
Oh, right, yeah. Is that Staffordshire? Is that
Staffordshire? Yeah. Well, Cheshire.
It's right on the board.
Well, I'm not a clay head.
Cheshire sounds nicer.
You know what?
No, clay head.
Clay head.
Is that because of the potteries?
Yeah.
Right. Do you still say duck? Ducky a lot up there?
No, so it's in the Stokey land. Yeah, they do very much.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have got a funny accent. Like, a lot of my family are from Stoke, so yeah, it is hard work understanding sometimes.
But I always quite like the accent.
When I was at uni, we used to go out in Hanley.
Yeah.
Wow. That's nothing against people that live in Hanley, by the way. That was just the nightclub we used to go to, Creation, I think it used to be called.
I don't know. I've only been out in Hanley a few times and, yeah, rough nights.
You used to wipe your feet on the way out of that club, not before you went in.
What do you do for a living, Michael? You're looking phenomenal shape.
Hey, I'm a soldier.
Right, that'll be the reason then, won't it? We had to knock down a wall to get his calves through the door.
Yeah, so I work for the British Army.
Good lad.
Wow, there we go.
How long have you been with them?
Yeah, round of applause.
6 years.
Yes.
6 long years.
I don't think you boys get enough credit.
No, I don't think
you get paid enough.
Yeah, we don't. Like, honestly, this past year that my wife's been out of work, it's just been awful.
Yeah.
Like, I'm lucky because in my trade, I'm a BT man in the army. So I do like fibre and copper cabling.
Okay.
That's what I specialise in. And we go up like a pay band because we are like skilled in what we do. But the problem is it's still not enough money. The current name for it is Communications Infrastructure Engineer. But we used to be called like install technicians.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Because like the thing with the army is like you specialize in like a trade. You're a soldier first. Yeah. That's the whole motto.
Yeah.
And then you have a trade afterwards. Not everyone. Obviously, you've got infantry lads in there. Bread and butter is just in the field. You know, rifle is number one. That's it.
Yeah.
But for us, as like technical soldiers, we're like, you're a soldier, but also I'm actually.
So you're the one
an engineer.
That, yeah, so you get the communications together for people to be able to radio through and...
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
Talk us through a typical day.
In the army or just like in my life?
Yeah, we'll start with army.
Well, if we're not on exercise, so we're not like deployed out or we're not doing anything, it's just pretty chilled out on barracks, you know, sort of wake up.
What time do you wake up? Is it like 3:30 in the morning?
No. That's like in your basic training when you're getting ragged like every day.
Getting ragged.
Yeah. And they're trying to like, you know, they're trying to beat it out of you sort of thing. Sort of like a civvy mindset. And they're trying to like put you through the paces. But it's all just a big game. But like once you've passed out and you've gone through your trade training and that, you're treated like an adult.
Okay, well, that's nice, isn't it?
Like at least they try to. But yeah, for me personally, like the past year sort of not really been military life for me.
Right.
With everything that's gone on. Mm. But now that I'm sort of back into the swing of things, so like this past week I'm on a trade exercise in Oxford, in Bicester.
Okay.
So I'm waking up at like 6:30 and driving like an hour and a half. We are supposed to stay there, but because my wife needs support or doesn't like me being away at the minute with everything that's sort of been going on, I've been like going back and forth. So like a typical day, wake up about 7:30, 8:00. And then depending on what day it is, it's like PT in the morning and it's I hate it.
Mm.
Getting ragged about it, like first thing in the morning. I'm not a morning person either. Like, no way. I struggle because I don't sleep very well and I've definitely not slept well the past year.
Yeah.
So yeah, like a typical day is just waking up and like thinking, here we go. Go and run like 2 or 3K, get beasted. and then come back, get a shower, then you go to sort of barracks, and then you sort of, in barracks it's dead because you're waiting around for like, you know, site work essentially, like work on site. But yeah, that's about it. Like, and then finish at half four, and then on a Friday it's a half day, which we all love.
Tell us about your wife, how you met, how long you've been together.
Okay, so funny story. I met my wife when we first sort of were getting, not getting together, but like, I like the look of her essentially.
That's a start.
That wasn't the line, was it, that you used?
No, it wasn't. No, it was actually worse than that.
Yeah.
Go on then, you can't just say that and not say anymore.
Well, I'll start it off. I'll get to it. Yeah, so one of my mutual friends was friends with this girl called Beth.
Okay.
And she was in a relationship at the time, so off limits, I'm respectful and all that good stuff. Still like the look of her. But anyway, we went on a night out and it was sort of like my last night out before we joined. Before I went and joined. Funnily enough, like, I was trying to get on these other two birds and they were coming from, funnily enough, Stoke. They come down in crew and they're like, oh, you'll pay for the taxi, won't you? And I was like, oh yeah, whatever, it won't be that much. It was like 40 quid. So she's behind me, Beth, my now wife, with her fella at the time. And I'm there trying to draw like 40 quid out for these two birds that I think I'm getting lucky with, which I'm absolutely not getting lucky with them, because as I take the money out, I don't know what it is. I just lost my shit and I just started headbutting the cash machine.
Right. Wow.
I don't know why, but this is, and the fun.
Wasn't expecting that.
No, I mean, I do that when I look at my bank account.
Was it one of those ones that goes, oh, we're going to charge you £1.99 to take out your own money?
I can't remember. I'm pretty sure it was a free one as well, but I don't drink anymore. There's a reason for it, because I just like have a screw loose.
Well, yeah.
Like, I don't know
certainly,
what it is.
Certainly comes across that way.
Yeah. And I, funnily enough, ended up with a screw in my head. That's why I've got a dent in my head.
Yeah.
And then that's what led to me deciding to just get rid of my hair. Because I was thinning out and it was losing it from like the age of 13.
Yeah.
And Beth saw this?
She saw this, right? And this is the most mental thing, was like, I couldn't understand.
That's the one for me.
Yeah. Absolutely nutter. Thank you. Because after that, I got picked up in an ambulance because my mate was concerned because the screw had like stuck in my head.
Yeah.
And I was like, nah, I want to go back out. Like, whatever. Got in the back of this ambulance and obviously the paramedics like, oh. And I just felt like pure shit because I was like, I'm wasting the NHS's time. Ooh. I'm a dreg on society. And I'm like, oh yeah, I'm going in the army next week. And he's like, oh mate, you've got to have a bit of a screw loose for that, haven't you? And I'm just like, oh yeah, this doesn't get worse. So I'm in the back of this ambulance, there's a picture of it somewhere, and I'm just like, start crying because I'm like, oh no, like I've worked so hard to get to this point, to be in the army, and gone through all this like rigmarole, and I'd lost loads of weight and give up like one of my hobbies, which was powerlifting.
Yeah.
And now I potentially might get med discharged before I've even started. But luckily enough, we went to the hospital. I got the screw taken out. She just cut it out and I was like, happy days. And I went back out on the piss and went back out?
Yeah. Straight same night?
Yeah. But as I was leaving, this is the mad thing. As I was leaving the hospital, Beth had come with her fella to visit to make sure that I was all right. And like at this point, I didn't really know her. Like I knew her, but I didn't know her well. And I just couldn't believe it. I was, that stuck in my mind for like quite a while, because at this point we weren't together. And that was sort of like, I always think about it, I always think back to it. It's like a staple moment in my brain that just sticks. Anyway, me and my mate, we went back out in Hanley and yeah, I came back over the next day.
She came to visit you in there.
Yeah.
Imagine what a fella at the time would have thought. Well, should we carry it now? Let's go. You see that guy who's just headbutted a cash machine? He's got a screw hanging out of his head. Let's go and see him.
Yeah, it was like, I don't think she came to see me like on a personal level. It was just like to make sure I was all right. Yeah. And like, we're quite a good friends group.
Yeah.
And like, they were like, my mutual friends were really good friends with her. So I think it was kind of just like that. But I didn't understand it at the time. It always stuck in my head. And
literally.
Anyway, maybe 2 years later, a year and a half later, something like that, COVID hit.
Yeah.
And I'd passed through my phase two training at this point. Okay. I'd passed my basic training. I was a soldier now, happy days. And then I went to my trade training in a place called Blandford. And I was stuck there. I couldn't come home. My mum had not long had cancer. So I couldn't go there because she was vulnerable.
Oh, yeah.
So I was stuck on camp, which was awful.
Yeah.
But we just gamed, basically. There was nothing for us because we were like in we were sort of in like this weird part of like the army where there's actually nothing to do but to be educated, and you can't be in an educational environment because of, you know, social distancing and stuff like that. Yeah. So we found ourselves in sort of like this time and place where I just felt like I was stealing a wage. I'm like chilling out, playing, you know, card every single day.
So this was, by the sounds of it, around 2018-ish, was it, you said?
2019. 2020, actually, something like that.
Okay.
Have you got a nickname?
Yeah.
Go on.
Oh, yeah.
Gorilla Bickies.
What?
Sorry?
Gorilla Bickies.
Gorilla Bickies?
Yeah. That's what, so it, when you go through basic training, everyone sort of gets given a name. There's all sorts, but mine was, I had an Irish bloke as my section commander, and he's like the bloke that looks after you and gets you through your training, essentially. And he's the one that beasts you and like comes into your room when you're not in there and rips your kit out and throws it all over the place if you're not like doing what he asks.
Yeah.
And he called me Gorilla Bickies, and it sort of stuck. It's become a gamer tag. It's literally my whole life, basically. It's like my brand. I'm Gorilla Bickies.
So,
I love it. Any reason?
Well, because of the powerlifting. Because when I joined the army, I was bigger than I am now.
Yeah. Okay,
and
got you.
I was like, basically, it's essentially another word for steroids.
Okay.
But he was used to call me Gorilla Biscuits.
Gorilla Biscuits.
Okay.
I was going to call you Frankenstein because of the screw.
Oh, yeah.
Even though it was in the top of your head.
Oh, I've had all sorts.
Now, thank you for joining us on the show, because obviously the reason, and I've been mucking around for a bit and learning about how, you know, your brilliant nickname and what you do. But obviously the reason that you're here, and we appreciate you being here, but also, as we will say, it's horrible that you have to be here in the first place.
Exactly.
You've lost a child. Talk us in as much detail as you wish to go into about this, please.
Yeah, so we just moved to Nuneaton. I'd posted in to Nuneaton at the barracks there on promotion. So, you know, it was actually a positive time, even though I actually have OCD and I struggle quite badly with like things being out of order. So there was a lot of stress involved. And me and Beth, we've been having unprotected sex for a long time. So we were always confused, and we'd had a miscarriage before we finally, you know, got pregnant. We actually didn't know that it was a miscarriage until she'd gone for bloods because she wasn't feeling well, and there was pregnancy hormones present in the blood, and we realised that that was a miscarriage.
That happens a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah, I reckon probably a lot of people have miscarriages and just put it down to a period. But yeah, so we actually figured out that that was, and maybe we've had other miscarriages, but we knew for definite that this one was a miscarriage.
When was this?
So February last year, I moved to Nuneaton, and it was the December before. So
23.
Okay. I'm not good with time.
Yeah.
December.
Even though it should be.
Yeah.
But it was around December time before the February. So would it have been 2023? Yeah.
Okay.
And then we moved to Nuneaton, and, you know, stressful, moving house is awful anyway. And then I'm going to a whole new place, going to work with a load of new alien people that I've never met before. And obviously that weighs heavy on the mind.
Yeah.
And then silver lining, Beth finds out she's pregnant, and I was just shocked because like we've been together for like nearly 2.5 years at this point.
Were you trying for a baby, or did it?
Never. I personally, in my mindset, I'm sort of never trying.
Yeah.
It's just, if it happens.
I think
it's a bloke thing.
Let nature take its course.
Yeah. And if it happens, I'll step up there and then.
Right.
But until that happens, it's not happening, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I don't know. That was my mindset on it. Cause like, you know, you've never really got your life in order. And I've always wanted to have my life in order, cause I'd had like quite a rough childhood. Hence why I joined the army. And yeah, I just was like, I want to have my life in order, and you're never going to have your life in order. So when it happens, it happens. And
life is what happens when you're making plans, as they say.
Well, literally, yeah. And this was the thing, because like we'd got to Nuneaton and everything was like in high stress. Beth got pregnant. Beth was pregnant and moved pregnant, but we just didn't know.
Okay.
And then we went through the process of getting her booked into a doctor's, because we weren't aware that you could, you know, go straight to the hospital now. We went through that rigmarole, and it was an absolute nightmare because we didn't have a fixed address yet, because we just moved, and they were making it extremely difficult. And that obviously, that the first couple of weeks are important, and you want to know all the facts. So that took longer than it should have. So it was like maybe after the positive pregnancy test, maybe like 3 to 4 weeks before she even got into a medical facility. Eventually we got there, and everything sort of was going swimmingly, and I, you know, I was like, whoa, like this is happening now.
Did you feel like any stereotypical male instincts kicking in then about, you know, you're now going to be the protector, provider and all of those cliches?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Like for me, I felt like I said, like when it happens, I will step up. Yeah. And it kind of, it massively changed my mindset. Like at the time I'd put on quite a bit of weight and I was, you know, my mindset wasn't great. I would smoke in and when I drank, I'm a bit of a binge drinker. And so I, you know, bad stuff happened. And I really wanted to just not be the perfect dad. I don't believe in being perfect, but just having the best environment that you can provide as a person.
Yeah, well, you said it already, stepping up.
Yeah, and I wanted that to just all be in place. And it just, yeah, moving on, it just wasn't going to be perfect. Yeah. Like, you know, that's just how it is. Yeah. And I'd just gone away on this shooting detail that I didn't really want to be on because my wife was pregnant and it was close to finding out the gender. So up until like the 20-week point,
yeah,
everything was sort of going all right. The Doppler was fine.
Everything
just seemed normal. Yeah. So I didn't think anything. I was really excited to come back from this detail that I didn't want to be on, mm-hmm, to find out some good news that I'm hopefully, you know, it's going to be a, yeah, boy like we all want, like I want. And yeah, we got to the hospital, we went for the scan, we were actually at George Eliot in Nuneaton, and we went into the scan room and all the scanning started, and I'd been like researching, like for me, like science is where I sort of find my peace. Like, okay, I find enjoyment in researching.
Yeah, yeah.
And it also, it gives me peace of mind, essentially.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'd been researching what to look for on the scan to make sure it's a male. And I saw it and I was like, yes, happy days. And then I started, like, you know, rambling on in the scan. I was like, oh, you know, we're going to go camping and we're going to go do boy stuff and all that. And I was really excited.
Yeah.
And like, I was thinking, like, I'm getting my life in order. I'm becoming a better person at least. This is going to be good. And then shortly after I finished harping on about all this sort of like miraculous stuff that I wanted to do, the sonographer just stopped and was like, yeah, something's not quite right. And that was sort of like the moment where I just knew that, like,
this was at 20 weeks, was it?
Yeah, 20. What, he was born at 21 weeks,
right,
but this,
okay,
was like the anomaly scan.
Yeah.
Where they sort of like screen for like Down syndrome, Patel, yeah, yeah, that sort of stuff. Yeah. Obviously, you will know probably better than me. And yeah, it was that scan where then we were referred to fetal medicine the next day. So the next day we went to Coventry, we went to fetal medicine, and the woman, she was like a senior specialist.
Can I just stop you quickly? No,
yeah.
So in something, the sonographer stopped in his tracks, and
yeah,
then the next, what was the communication like? What, because that's a tough moment.
Yeah.
And also for somebody like you're saying that suffers with OCD. Mm.
Yeah.
For you, your, I would imagine subconsciously, your plan is that you go for this scan, everything he's,
yeah,
working out, everything he's working linearly,
yeah,
as it should be, and then, no, hang on a second, I'm just going to throw a curveball in there.
Yeah, and that was the thing, because like I'd been, it, I wouldn't say like it was planned out, but like I'm also someone that's like, you know, let's not build the room yet, let's not do the room yet, just in case.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, just, you know, we don't know yet. I'm sort of like, also can be quite last minute,
yeah,
but for the right reasons. In my mind and heart, I went in there expecting to walk away as, you know, it's a boy, happy days, I've got what I want, now the fun begins sort of thing. Like, you know, all the sort of things that come after.
Yeah.
And
did Beth want a boy?
I mean, she's just happy with whatever. She,
right,
just,
okay,
wants to be a mum.
Yeah.
Like, she's just got that raw maternal instinct to just be,
okay,
a mother.
Yeah.
And yeah, so like, after that was just a massive curveball. It sort of like hit me hard because I knew that I now had to be strong for my wife. I knew now that, like, we have quite an emotional relationship anyway, but I knew like I was going to have to be reserved and my needs are second at the minute, even though like I was told and sort of like guided through it by various people,
yeah,
that like, you know, it doesn't need to be that way. I think it's just a natural instinct.
Okay.
And we went to fetal medicine and pretty much the next day I could see on the scan myself that there was facial deformity and that, you know, it wasn't going to be this sort of happily ever after that we had in our heads.
Yeah.
And
how are you feeling at that point?
I mean, I knew I was going to, me and my wife were going to have to make a tough decision. And I knew that we already knew the answers, but we couldn't like put it across because literally after that, the woman at the senior specialist, she said, okay, it is bad. I believe it's this. And she was quite extreme of her vocabulary. The baby had cyclopia, which is sort of like where it has one eye and all that sort of stuff. And we were just like, whoa, like that, you know, this is a bit too much right now. And she was like, the options are this, TFMR, or you can continue with the pregnancy. And we just knew that continuation was not going to be a thing because the problems that he had, and from the scan pictures like I looked at as a non-professional, I could tell that it wasn't going to be like a healthy pregnancy. Mm. So we knew the answers, and that was the toughest thing because especially for my wife, like that really hit her hard in that she's got to physically harm her child in order for it, you know, for it to force the birth, and you know, because it was too far gone to have it non-naturally. So yeah, I think that was a tough point in the whole ordeal. And luckily my mother-in-law came straight down, she supported us. And then the next day, I think it was the next day or a day or two later, we went to George Eliot and I said, can I see the scan pictures again? I need to see them. Because in this sort of gap, I'd been doing all sorts of research into the report that the specialist gave of everything that she listed.
You've been quite meticulous with this then.
Yeah, because for me, it was at the end of this, no matter what happens, I want me and my wife to know wholeheartedly that we had made the right choice.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that, I think living with the guilt of making the wrong choice would be worse than the actual event itself. Mm. So I did lots of research in those few days. We went over and over and over it. And then when we went back to George Eliot for Beth to take the pill in order to initiate the pregnancy, which starts like shedding the uterus lining, I'd said, can I see the scan pictures again? And they accommodated me. They said, yeah, we know it's tough, all that sort of stuff. And I looked at them again and I could just see it. All the research that I sort of did fell into place and I could just see like all of these extra pictures that the scanner had took because they've got to be sure too. I could see it and I knew that like we were making the right choice. And then it was just a matter of like helping Beth and supporting her in taking the medication, because I think she must have sat there for about 30 to 40 minutes just looking at it and she felt sick. And obviously I think that's the hardest part about it, is that she has to initiate the process.
Yeah.
But that is what we opted for.
Can I ask you a really, really difficult question?
Yeah.
Because it's something that's just sort of come to me as well, is that you've asked to look at all these scan photos again.
Yeah.
Or scan prints again, everything like that, so that you can be 100% certain, like you said, that you are making the correct decision based on the research that you've done.
Yeah.
Did you not trust the professionals? Or did this give you an opportunity to be in control?
So this is the thing, is that in my upbringing and my background, I've always had a problem with authority and I've always had a problem with, I don't know, I guess the people that are responsible for me making wrong decisions.
Okay.
So that's always left me with probably a hunger to be in control.
Yeah.
But essentially, in this scenario, in my mindset, it wasn't a case of me trying to be in control. You hear every day failings with the NHS and, you know, it's happened to me and my wife. And I just wanted us to be certain. Yeah. And I didn't discredit the professional, but I think more eyes is better than, you know, than two, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like I felt like it was my duty just to make sure that, you know, my wife wasn't making the wrong decision and that she didn't have to live with that. Mm. And that's all it was. It wasn't a case of like, I don't trust them.
Yeah.
Mm. I just think if just more eyes on is better than what...
If you're making this huge decision, it needs to be right.
Exactly 100%.
Right. And as much as it can't be, I suppose, 100% right ever, you want the odds to be in your favour more than...
Absolutely.
Than not, right? Yeah.
I think when Ryan mentioned that, it's because it is that, isn't it? I mean, we've talked about. I mean, in fact, you know, with you as well, having that element of control, and it comes in as a cliche and a stereotype, but it is knowing as well. And I want to bring this back for a moment to you, Ryan, and to you, Matt, because obviously with the different in the time frames, did you do anything similar in terms of, for that control reason? Just, you know, when you go, we've spoke about this in the past, you know, when you go on and you just start looking up everything, and your brain kind of naturally has a way of sometimes just going to the worst case scenario. Was that, or were you in a different place and you were just leaving it in the hands of the professionals?
I can answer that
go
straight
for it,
away. Like, yeah, because it comes in. I must admit, the only thing that I could control with what happened with Callie was the decision to tell Crystal what had happened.
Yeah.
Because it was just a bit of background. Like, Callie was born and she was neonatally born, so she was alive for 27 minutes, but Crystal had gone in for a C-section. My wife didn't know exactly what happened. The midwife, obviously, I was given the news first. Midwife said, "Do you want me to tell Crystal?" And I was like, "No, because I'm her husband, so I will be telling Crystal." So I suppose that was the only thing I could control, because ours happened so quickly as well. But I wasn't going to let anyone else control that moment. Yeah. So yeah, I suppose that's the only thing that I can think of. Really.
I think I was the polar opposite. I'd lost all control. Completely lost all control, because we were told that obviously Lily's heart had stopped beating. Mm. So there was nothing I could have done at that time.
Yeah.
The only thing I remember saying a lot to the bereavement midwife and the doctor at the time was, so she's going to go for a section. Why can't she go for a section now to get the baby out now? Why does she have to go home with a dead baby inside? Why? And it was only then that they had, you know, speak to you and explain the reasons why it was they were going to induce for a natural birth and things like that. So you obviously got the explanation of what you needed at that time. But in terms of the aspects of control, I'd completely lost control at that point. Amy said something on the video, not on our new promo video, not that long ago, where she said something along the lines of, "I just completely lost my mind." Mm. I remember punching a wall.
Do you remember doing that now?
Like, I remember it clearly. I completely remember it. Yep. I vividly,
isn't it?
Vividly, yeah. It's like it was yesterday, though it was, 15 years ago. Yeah. But yeah, the whole thought process around the fact that you have to terminate.
Yeah.
I completely and utterly 100% get why you've done.
Yeah.
Why you wanted to research fully to know that you were making the correct decision. And when I asked you the question, it's not a question to say, you know, why didn't you trust the professionals and stuff? Because I think as a dad, because that's what you are, as a dad, you want to do what is right for your child, don't you?
Exactly.
Yeah. You've got to like scratch your own itch, isn't it? However you cope in whatever. Yeah. That's why I wanted to just get there.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
Because that was the thing for me, was like, I found, like I say, solace in the science because answered those burning questions that I had, and I went away and I delved deep, and that helped me to understand this is the right decision, because I don't, like, I'd went deep, and yeah, it definitely was the right choice.
So as a soldier, because you've said it right at the very beginning, the way that they almost beat out of you the civvy side of things and turn you into a soldier. So you have a certain mindset and things like that on how you do your job on a daily basis. How do you cope with that then as a male, where you haven't got the control over what's happened, and yet you're in a situation whereby you're working a lot of the time? Let's say you get sent off, deployed somewhere, you're working somewhere where you don't have any control. How are you, what's your thought processes around that?
Are you asking like sort of how does this bereavement fit into military life?
Yeah.
I guess I've had a rough life, so I've dealt with, you know, I've battled a lot, if that makes sense. Like, I've been in rough situations. You know, I was in care. I went into foster care. I've been in kids' homes, that sort of stuff, for a bit more background. Yeah. So that's allowed me to deal with challenging situations that the average person wouldn't find themselves in.
So no stranger to adversity.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, and hardship. So, like, I'm essentially thriving in that environment. And I know that sounds weird.
Okay.
But it makes sense, though.
If I'm not stressed, actually, I can't relax. Okay. It's really, yeah. It's actually,
it's mad, isn't it?
It's actually quite insane when you think about it. And I spoke to a really good bloke. So I went through the army welfare. They give me compassionate leave. They were great.
Mm. And I was about to ask you about that. Yeah.
It's really good. It's good.
They were really good. And through my hardship, I am great at speaking. I like to speak out. I think that it's helped me in my life. It's helped me control my anger issues. It's helped me deal with the issues, you know, general family issues and whatnot. So like, I know that it's great to show your emotions. Mm. I know that it's better to be out there than to be locked in. Mm. I've seen both sides of the coin. So that was sort of how I wanted to approach this. Mm. And it kind of turned into like this post-traumatic development. And, you know, it probably happens to a lot of people who have been through this. And, you know, it leads on to things like this podcast, which I think is great because it gives people a platform like me. Mm. Because like my thought process for all this, like I received great support from the army, from like the welfare team. And even though they couldn't quite help me, it was sort of like they pushed me to help myself. Mm. And I went through all sorts of stuff, like in the grief. It was awful. I'd, you know, old habits kicked back up,
such as
gambling.
Right.
The funny thing was on the step to becoming a dad. I am a dad, which I keep forgetting. Yeah. Conceptually, I find that difficult, especially as we were saying before.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When someone comes up to you and goes, "Have you got kids?" and I'm like, "Well, I did." And yeah, that I find that so weird. But yeah, in sort of that grief, it was just harrowing time. And like, it's hard because I'm still trying to be hard-faced. But in terms of the military, and back to your original question, because I've gone off on a bit of a tangent,
right,
which I'm great at doing. And my wife hates me for it. I'm not interested in the persona of being a hard person because I'm in the military.
Yeah.
And that's what I want to sort of push out there, is that just because...
There's old cliches attached to it, isn't there?
100%.
Which I want to get to in a moment, but yeah.
And like, I want to stop that.
Yeah.
I want that to go away. Like, you know, it doesn't matter who you are. Every bloke will cry at a certain film or, you know, I honestly genuinely believe like being emotional is the best way because you bottling things up only leads to destruction.
Mm.
And I've witnessed that firsthand throughout the early years of my life. And through the journey that I've took, I felt equipped to deal with what we were going through. And like I was saying, the Army Welfare Service put me onto it, a bloke who works for Fatherhood Solutions, a bloke called Scott Mayer. And I spoke to him. I didn't see him for very long. I only saw him like on a few occasions. But he was great to talk to because he went through a loss. He, you know, and then he started up a charity and went down that process. But he also saw things from the scientific side. He has ADHD, and that affected the way that his grief sort of embedded itself.
Mm.
And I found this really strange because like with the OCD in me, I noticed how it was affecting me and how like, you know, I'd got like this disillusioned mindset of like, you know, I need to protect my wife. She's going to be out of work. And I was going over and over again, how can I make money? How can I make money? And I was spending like 20 hours a day, like looking at crypto markets and stuff like that, trying to invest money in order to like make more money. And like,
and judging from what I've learned about you so far, you probably spent another 20 hours of that same day. So that's 40 hours in one day, just researching how to do it on the internet.
Yeah, literally. And it was just crazy. And it got really badly out of hand and like, you know, losses and all sorts of stuff. And like, you know, all that stemmed from grief.
Mm.
And that was the crazy thing for me, is like, I'd put all that to bed and then it all came back because I was vulnerable.
How did Beth...
just under the surface, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sorry, I was going to say, how did Beth react to that? Because she's grieving at the same time.
Exactly.
So what sort of happened then in regard to the relationship? With the fact that... Because that's a distraction, what you're going through at that time.
Yeah, 100%.
It's a massive distraction and it's probably a distraction to take you subconsciously, to take your mind away from the inevitable of A, what's happened, and B, the pain that you're having to go through after it. And like you've also said as well, the guilt.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I'm lucky. I don't think there's really anything that I could do that would upset my wife massively to the point where she would leave me, apart from the obvious.
Yeah.
And I am lucky in that regard, and that's why I married her. If that makes sense, not just because I love her, but because like she's emotionally intelligent and she understood that like I was grieving and I'm a particular type of person and I have my ways, which she always jokes about. And I love that about her, is that essentially I can do no wrong, even though we're going through the most traumatic thing that we've ever been through as a couple.
That says everything if you'd be that strong during. Yeah.
Yeah. Like we didn't, it was weird because like we didn't struggle in our relationship. If anything, I wouldn't say that it brought us closer because we were close anyway. It just strengthened our bond and made, like, I don't know, like we supported each other. It was that's the only way to say it.
Can I ask you, Michael,
yeah.
You know, you, obviously not to pry too much, but you said you've been through your times during life, right?
Yeah.
You've had your challenges, that's obvious. Not that it's kind of putting it on any kind of pedestal or such, but where would you put this moment in your life? Is this one of the hardest things you've been through? Is it up there with it? I know there's probably no comparison in a sense because they're different, right? But yeah.
Yeah, that's a good question because I don't view life as like a series of events that I rank as.
Yeah,
like,
no, that's, yeah, I get that.
Like, I don't know. I'd say, where would this fit? I'd say I just compartmentalized it in a part of my mind that I come back to occasionally for events that are out of my control and events that have shaped me, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I don't really rank it. I just see it as something to learn from and something to never forget.
So it's another challenge you've faced it.
Yeah.
And now it's just, this is, as you said, this is the moment in your life and you're dealing with it as you need to deal with it, right?
Yeah, literally. It's like, I don't know, it's tough because it's something that something that I'm continually dealing with.
Yep.
I don't think it's something that, I feel like I pick it up and I deal with it and then it presents itself in a certain way and then, we sort of just come back to it and go back and forth.
Yeah.
Do you still carry any guilt? Do you still feel any guilt, even though you don't need to be guilty?
In terms of the termination?
Yeah. So like, you know, you were saying about that there's the guilt that comes along with that. Do you still feel any form of guilt about having to make that decision, which, can I just say, is a decision made in love of your child because that is ultimately the best decision that could have been made at that time?
I personally don't feel any, I never felt any guilt about making that decision.
Sorry, it was Beth.
It was Beth that felt the guilt.
Oh, sorry, right. Apologies, yeah.
Yeah, I personally knew that once I'd done my research and my findings were, I was content with my research and what is actually happening and I'd put them together, I didn't have any guilt.
How did you help Beth then with the guilt that she felt?
Constant reassurance. It was just constant reassurance that she is making the right decision and that I could be her pillar of support, that she can lean on me in order to deal with that guilt, because maternally she's always going to be guilty because she is essentially part of the process to ending the child's life. Mm. We called him Noah.
Yeah.
She felt like she was part of that process of death, and I think that she will always feel guilt for it, and it does eat her up, and I can see that. And I know I do things, and especially along the path of grief, I definitely didn't help with the actions and the way that I went and the way that I was dealing with it, but she was still emotionally intelligent enough to cope with it as well.
Do you think Beth had any distractions of her own to go? Because obviously everyone has to deal with it. You're still together as a unit. You're still united. You're saying, hearing about your relationship, and you said you're quite an emotional couple.
Yeah.
Did you know of any sense of anything or wary of anything?
In brutal honesty, I think I was her distraction, if that makes sense.
Okay.
I think that because I was around so much and, you know, like gaming is a big part of her life, and I think that helped to distract her.
Yeah.
I don't know what this is, but I feel like when, on average, most blokes go through something, it always usually leads to something, you know, that is not a good coping mechanism. Whereas not every woman doesn't tend to fall into that. But like for me, I was doing degenerate things, but she was quite, you know, doing normal things or things that wouldn't be considered as degenerate. And okay. This was like,
all right,
this was like the weird thing. And she probably couldn't understand why I was doing those things. But with her, I feel like I was her coping mechanism because I was constantly there for her. Mm. But not just me, like she had the dog too. I think the dog was a big part of it. Yeah, it's called Basil.
Basil.
What a great name.
That's a great name.
What kind of dog?
So we think he's a Jack Russell cross, but we're not sure if he's some like weird German breed as well, because he looks exactly like it. And everyone goes, he's tall for a Jack Russell, isn't he? So we don't actually know. We need to get that done. But he's a big part of our lives. All of our friends and family know him. And he was a big support blanket for Beth as well.
Does Basil have an army nickname?
No, he doesn't.
Brush. There we go.
I was waiting for that one to come.
I find it interesting what you said, just going back a couple of steps about what you said about the difference in possibly sometimes in males and females characteristics, how they deal with stuff, things like that. And, you know, since we've lost Callie and the men that I've met through this, there are a lot of people that have said to me that they've had some kind of coping mechanism that isn't necessarily positive.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. I think if it's going to happen out of two people, I think the males are the one. And listen, it's a complete generalization, by the way. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
I'm not just saying this is fact, but the more people out of couples,
it's a theme.
Yeah, there's a that's right.
It doesn't have to be a fact. That's the
word.
To be a theme.
That's the word. It's a theme, and I. It's in. I say it very very loosely. It's interesting to see that difference in kind of how males and females deal. We've talked about that a lot on the show, right? But yeah, I think if there is something like termed as destructive or negative, I do think it tends to come from the male.
Oh yeah,
the male side. And the male is the one who.
Headbutts cash points.
Yeah. Mate, I really like the way that you explained that, though, where you talked about the degenerative way that you coped with it, but Beth's way of coping with it is classed as the normal
we've
way.
We've never had that before.
That's why I didn't say that word.
I don't think we've ever had the honesty, actually, from a bloke to actually say that. I can't remember what word you just used there as well. The destructive. Blokes naturally fall into destructive habits, and whether that's gambling, drinking,
drugs,
whatever that may be. Because it's the man way of doing things, isn't it, basically? But the way that you've explained that and the way that Beth had that almost normal thing, which to some even still can be a destructive...
Yeah.
Way of coping with things I thought you explained it really well.
Yeah, actually. No, absolutely. Okay. And it's great honesty. Absolutely.
It was a real insight. It's great to hear how strong as well, because like we say, relationships are funny at the best of times, aren't they?
Yeah.
And without this shitstorm of losing your own child, the amount of relationships that will end is pretty half, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway. But see, I mean, Matt's still together with Crystal, Ryan and Amy still together. Before I forget, because there is one question that, and I don't know if this is a really stupid question or a good one, and you'll be able to let me know, because if it goes against those stereotypes, but being a soldier, how did your training and not being the civvy and all of that impact how you processed grief? Because there's maybe some changes of how you, as you said earlier, compartmentalize things.
Yeah, so essentially in the military, you go through all of this training and it's essentially to increase your stress resistance. Mm. It's so that you can still act in stressful situations. But actually, from sort of my own findings, I find that when it comes to, because like you're training to be in a military environment, in operations and in the theater of war. So these are not the same.
Oh, yeah.
Personal struggle and training to be in a stressful situation, it increases your stress resistance to that specific that specific stressor
okay.
of that.
Yeah.
So I don't feel like it offered me any value in dealing with it. And I think that happens a lot in the military.
Yeah.
And it's something that I've
noticed. I was wondering that,
Because, like, you know, you can't prepare for losing your own child. And second to that, you know, people don't know how to cope with, you know, personal stress most of the time because we all have coping mechanisms for it. Like going out on the weekend, like doing drugs, like, you know, doing destructive things in order to cope with stress. So I feel like this is why, you know, I kind of want to go potentially maybe down the route of welfare in my military career and helping other people, not just because I've got wisdom to impart, because I've been through it and I've seen it. And I feel like, in answer to your actual question, like, in my circumstance, I don't think it offered me anything.
Okay.
My training. However, the support that was available to me through the military, you know, on site, through welfare, absolutely did help.
Yeah.
In, they helped my wife. I was speaking, so the army have like an army welfare support.
Yeah.
So you've got like...
Are they easily accessible?
Absolutely, but there's a stigma attached to it.
What is it?
Welfare case or G1.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, so this is the thing, because I'd personally never gone to welfare because I feel like I'd wanted to...
Is it seen as... Sorry to put it up.
Yeah,
no. Is it seen as weak? Like, I'm doing quotations here. That male...
Not weak, but people... It kind of goes both ways because people...
Yeah, it's a shame.
People abuse it, 100%. People definitely abuse the system. You know, oh, I don't want to do that, so... I'll go to welfare. Right. But when people genuinely need it, like I've been through it and they are good and it's there for a reason and it's definitely there to be utilized and it's easily accessible, but it's get, because like that was the thing for me was like, I don't want to be stigmatized. Yeah. I just want to be normal. Like my whole life I've been different, you know, I've social services, I've got this, I've got that. And now I just want to be a professional soldier or a professional.
Yeah.
The last thing I want is to be marked down as this individual now, but that was my own personal like take on it. That in terms of a military wide thing, welfare services are 100% easily accessible.
Great.
PTSD support through DCMH, which is like the sort of the military's own mental health team, and they have like psychiatrists that will like they go through it with you and all sorts of stuff and offer that kind of support to soldiers. It's all available. It's there. Great. And accessing those services doesn't make you less of a man at all. Yeah. And I preach that because everyone says like, there's like this, a common saying that like everyone knows about welfare. Sorry, nobody knows about welfare, sorry, until you need it. Mm-hmm. And then you, all of a sudden, you're just in it. And like that's what I want to get across to, like, because I have a bit of rank now. I've gone up, so I'm not a private anymore. I'm a Lance Corporal. So that means I will have people below me.
Yeah.
And as a leader, essentially, as you're taught to be, I think it's important for them to know that, you know, showing emotions is not a weakness.
No, it's like, a strength.
Yeah, like 100%.
And why is it not celebrated as the opposite? Because it's, I don't, is that the cliche?
I feel like we're getting there in society.
We are,
generally, like
slowly. Yeah.
But there's still that sort of like, you know, the typical old boy mentality.
Still a long way to go, isn't it?
But I've always said we're a pivot generation, aren't we?
Yeah.
As soon as the older generation pass and move on and you've got maybe our generation to an extent, we're teaching the younger ones now in schools, in community groups, in things like that, that it's okay to be emotional and to show emotion. And it's going to be a good few years yet before we get there, but we are working in the right direction, in the right direction. I found you really interesting.
Brilliant.
I think it's been fascinating about that welfare department.
So there's welfare department on CAM.
Okay.
And they offer help with all sorts. Cause like, you know, the military asks a lot.
Of course.
Like, you know, they ask you to move all over the country. They ask you to go to war. You know, they ask you to do a lot. So, like, that's why it exists.
I think it'd be interesting to see if there was much of a difference in how, say, for example, the welfare people that you were seeing within the army compared to the support that you and how conversations would have been put to you, thought processes in not more traditional route, but out of, you know, in a civilian area as opposed to in the army, etc. How you feeling? I think you've been a really, really interesting listen.
Yeah.
And it's flown by this
I know,
time.
Yeah.
Is there anything you want to bring up, gents?
I've really, really enjoyed it sounds like the wrong word, doesn't it? I've enjoyed speaking to you because I think you've spoken so well and you can tell that you can speak well.
Yeah.
You're very to the point, but also informative at the same time. And I think you've done your little boy proud.
Yeah.
I do.
Well, thank you.
I really do.
Do you get on with the RAF?
Well, on that bombshell, no. Now, I personally get on with absolutely everyone. Like, I make it my mission to, you know, put our differences aside. But,
brilliant.
You know, there is a massive stigma.
There is.
Because they stay in hotels.
You've come across an extremely likable person. And the reason why I asked you about that is because we had a guest on recently, weren't we? Yeah. We had a couple of episodes and he was, is it a mechanical engineer in the RAF? I upset him in the first episode because I said he was in the Navy.
Oh, yeah, that RAF would be upsetting.
I still might be getting it the wrong way around now. But we'll send you a link for that episode.
No, yeah. He was in the Navy.
See, I told you, I got it.
Was he in the Navy?
No, he was working on helicopters, if he's in the Navy.
He's working on helicopters.
Oh, I can't remember.
That's RAF.
It's RAF. No, it's RAF.
Strike three.
Strike three, you're out.
But yeah, I mean, and it was some interesting, and there's also an episode we had with a guy whose coping mechanism was online gaming.
Yeah.
Relentlessly.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we like about having the differences from of our guests, no matter your background, your culture, your race, your beliefs, your morals, because you're all bonded by this horrible shit.
Yeah.
But then there's the differences in the lives and the distractions and how you go about it, and also the bits where you come together. So I think I'll put the links for those episodes in the description for this one too.
I'm just, the main thing for me is, like, again, I just echo what Ryan says. I think it's been a fascinating conversation, but I'm just really pleased to hear the positive side of you being able to get your support through the army.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because I think, you know, you've talked about it more than once tonight. I think you've probably felt it's good to get that across, right?
Because absolutely, I think
sometimes the message comes into the public, right?
Yeah.
Just crack on. But, you know, you've said.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. And I think it's a really good positive message to send out there that, you know, in a traditional manly kind of
because it's just
environment, right?
Like breaking the mold, like that sort of thing.
Because that's the phrase, isn't it?
Yeah, because it is there. It, you know, it's still instilled in us. You've still got to be hard faced and all that. But like from my experience, like it, I don't think people think less of me because I'll cry at a TikTok reel or something like that.
Yeah,
like I don't really care what people think.
Yeah.
And I feel like
it's the most liberating feeling in the world when you finally realise that you don't care what someone else is thinking.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Good on you, man. Mm. Where are you now? How are you guys now? What's the future for you?
We recently had more hardship because Beth got pregnant and it was an ectopic pregnancy. So we're still sort of dealing with that.
Sorry to hear that.
But we are positive for the future. Yeah. And I think we're just in that sort of, that part of, again, where you're sort of trying and, like, you know, building again. So we're good. We're alive and we're thriving sort of thing. So I'm just hoping in the next few years.
Yeah.
Like, because coming to a completely alien place and have all this happening as well.
Yeah, it must be, yeah.
That's the hardest part because, like, Beth doesn't have a social circle. Like, you know, she struggled for work and stuff like that. And still, like, with all of this, I would never ask her to go out and work. Like, she knows she needs to deal with it. And, yeah, like, I think we've just got clear goals. We've got, like, a 2-year plan and we'll see what happens.
I love your mindset.
We'll send you over all the support group info and stuff that we have for the charity because we do monthly support groups. We've got a mums and grandmas group, got dads and granddads group and all that sort of stuff. So there's a community as well within itself and, you know, being able to talk to like-minded people that have not necessarily had the same experience but have had the experience of losing a baby. So
we are looking, in not too long in the distant future, to do like a mini series where we're going to get couples on.
Yes.
And I'm just listening to you, I think you and Beth, if she'd be interested.
I would love for her to come. Like, she's a character. Yeah, like, you know. So yeah, I'd pitch it to her. I think she's probably watching as well. And like, I don't know,
I'll tell you. Hang on.
So that'll be later on, a few months down the line.
Just send me an email.
Yeah,
I'll try and make it a bit more formal than what it has been. I've just been like, cheers, mate.
Yeah, don't worry about that, mate. It's fine. It's all good.
No, you've been.
Don't go formal with Matt. He won't know what's going on.
You've You've been brilliant. So that brings this episode of the Still Parents podcast to a close. I would like to thank Gorilla Bicky for joining us in the studio tonight. Okay, Michael, thank you, mate. You've been absolutely brilliant.
Wonderful, man.
Thanks for having me.
We're looking forward really to getting good. You back on in the future and meeting Beth too. If you would like to find out more, all the details in the description, also with any references to episodes which we have referenced in this episode tonight. Take care, everyone, and we will be back very soon with the next episode of the Still Parents podcast. Michael, thank you very much.
No worries, thank you.
The Still Parents podcast is proudly supported by Global's Make Some Noise. Click details in the description to find out more.